From our studios in downtown Portland, Oregon, this is a Coin6 Digital exclusive.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to another Coin6 Weather Podcast. As we make our way towards the next season here, fall is just around the corner. Wanted to bring you some facts about the climate of fall and what we can expect going into September, October, and then as we head towards our winter months. So I'm here at the National Weather Service in Portland. I've got Tyree with me. He is the Warning Coordination Meteorologist. Good morning.
Good morning, Kelly. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for letting me come in and speak with you. We're going to talk a lot about weather this morning.
That's great.
All right, Tyree. So you've been in the area for quite a while, haven't you? Can you talk more about your history and your career?
I've been here in the Portland area for 18 years, working for the National Weather Service. So if we go way back, I went to atmospheric science went to school to get an atmospheric science degree at the University of Utah. So I'm a Utah native. From there, I actually spent about 11 years as a weather officer in the Air Force.
Oh, wow.
And then I came out of there and went to work for the National Weather Service, and I've been at a few places. Been here in Portland. I've been down in Flagstaff, Arizona. So it's been a great career.
You must have seen a lot of weather here being in Portland for almost 2 decades.
Yeah, for almost 2 decades. A lot of big storms.
Yeah. And your career as an officer, a weather officer, I did have a couple of friends in my department who were in ROTC for the Air Force and were doing the same. So that's real cool.
Very similar work. travel around quite a bit and experience different places. So
it's good. That's great. So weather all around the U.S., but we're going to focus on our region here and Portland and the Valley and what we can expect going into fall time. We're just less than a week or so away, about 13 days now. So what is something that really drives these seasonal changes? That's obviously as we, you know, rotate and go around the sun, but I mean, more in terms of El Nino, is that something that we should be keeping track of as we head into fall?
Yeah, it sure is. That's one of the indicators we kind of look at that give us a long range forecast or a long-range outlook, if you will, in terms of precipitation, in terms of temperature.
Okay.
And really the skill is the temperature of precipitation going to be normal, or is it going to be above normal or below normal? So one of the things we'd like to look at is what we call ENSO, or the El Nino Southern Oscillation Index. So ENSO is just basically the year-to-year variations in the sea surface temperatures, the circulations in the atmosphere, and the rainfall patterns. So last winter, we were in a El Nino year, a weak El Nino. That has just ended, quite honestly, just in the last few weeks. And so all our projections are we're going to go into what we call ENSO neutral conditions this particular winter. So that just means that those sea surface temperatures, those circulation patterns, those rainfall patterns are kind of near normal. They're near their long-term averages. So so both ends of that spectrum, you have El Nino, which is the warm phase of ENSO, and then La Nina is the cool phase of El Nino. Or of ENSO.
So we use those sea surface temperatures in different regions of the Pacific to kind of gauge how we may move weather-wise into fall. And then ENSO is big for winter precipitation, too, in terms of snowpack.
That's correct.
Okay.
So when we're in a, for the Pacific Northwest, when we're in a La Nina condition, typically that means cooler than normal and wetter than normal conditions for the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. Conversely, if we're in an El Nino or the warm phase for the Pacific Northwest, that's drier than normal conditions and warmer than normal conditions is typically what we see. They don't always plan out that way, but the majority of them do.
Interesting. So El Nino neutral, how does that spell out for fall?
Well, you know, it's difficult to tell right now, but if we kind of look at our long-term projections, it does look like the early fall, we're going to be kind of warmer than normal.
Okay.
And then it looks like a little bit drier than normal as the fall months. And then once we turn the corner of the new year into 2020, we still see that warmer than normal signal in the temperature, but the precipitation gets kind of murky, if you will. It could be in any one of those three categories, above normal, below normal, or near normal.
Okay.
So the other thing we want to maybe kind of just mention on is, why are these ENSO phases so useful in our long-term forecasting? So it really kind of ends up, we kind of, like you alluded to earlier, we look at the equatorial sea surface temperatures and where that warm air resides in the Pacific Ocean. And so consequently, as you know, there's lots of what we call convection or energy released from the oceans up into the atmosphere, and it really kind of ends up determining where the jet stream or the storm track ends for the winter months.
Driver of these storms, right?
Big driver for these storms. Mm-hmm. So in La Nina conditions, our cool phase, the jet stream really likes to be over Oregon and Washington, get lots of storm activity. Mm. In the warm phase, where El Nino favor a little bit more southern latitude. Not that we're not going to get storms, but that's when California.
Yeah, I was going to say that's when California gets a lot more rain. It's kind of like what we saw last fall and winter too. California just got pounded with rain.
They did.
Yeah,
they had a good winter. Uh-huh. The Sierra snowpack was great. Uh-huh. Even the snowpack in the Southwest Colorado was really good.
So. Yeah,
and California really kind of made up for the drought.
Right. And it's really cool to see how the ocean and the atmosphere really do connect and feed off of each other.
Yeah, very, very interesting how it's all connected.
Right. So as we look into fall, is this the time frame that we start to get more windstorms, especially for the coast? I know that's kind of a more fall winter type thing. In an El Nino neutral year, is that something maybe more of a signature of windstorms that you've noticed or?
Well, you're absolutely right. It's interesting around here because I've always figured that, we transition from fall to winter. It's kind of like a light switch.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we're having really nice falls, and then we get into late October, and all of a sudden, it's raining.
Oh, yeah.
Winter's here. You know, we're getting constant rain. And you're right. In the falls, typically, we get a lot of coastal windstorms. This is when the low pressure systems in the Pacific gain a lot of strength. There's a strong jet stream, and they kind of move in parallel the coast. And of course, the most definitive weather disaster of the Pacific Northwest is the Columbus Day Storm. Big Bend Storm of October 12th, 1962. So, we're embarking on that time of year.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, El Nino does drive a lot of weather, especially in the wintertime. And we'll talk about that in another podcast. But lots of stuff to look forward to when we get into wintertime. Okay. So let's talk more about the typical fall climate here in the Pacific Northwest and specifically Portland. So coming off of summer and those warm overnight lows, I think this summer we did see one of the warmest overnight temperatures on average. We've observed really warm nights.
We have a lot of 60 degree nights, which is a bit unusual. kind of makes you feel like you're in the Midwest.
Yeah, tough sleeping weather there.
That's right, because a lot of us don't have air conditioning.
AC, right.
So I think the summer was quite grand, actually. Mm-hmm. We didn't really have a lot of hot weather during the days, but you're absolutely right.
And it was pretty normal. I think temperature-wise, we were a little bit above normal even, but it really felt cooler because we've been used to that excessive heat.
Interesting.
So I know we do start to get more fog here developing. We'll see more foggy, cooler mornings as we head into October and November. Those typically the most foggiest months?
That is, you're absolutely right. Yeah. So as the atmosphere starts cooling, the ground gets wet. So that's a recipe for radiation fog. And you're absolutely right. October, November is fog season, if you will. So we'll start to see a lot of fog episodes, especially in the early morning. Uh-huh. And also the days we get a lot of cloud cover, especially if we get marine layer in here,
right.
And the sun angle gets really low. Those are the days where it just really doesn't clear out all day. We stay cloudy and maybe even rainy all day in those cases. So.
And that's just the marine stratus. Can you kind of go over that onshore push, kind of like the marine layer, what that really is for folks here in the valley?
Yeah, so we refer to it as the marine push. And so out over the, we're pretty close to the coast, coastal area here, basically, 70, 80 miles as the crow flies over there. So we can get into different flow regimes and where we get what we call marine pushes. And so one of the best marine pushes we can get is when we get pretty strong southwesterly flow aloft. So maybe we're looking at, 10,000 feet, 5,000 feet, and we get this really strong southwesterly push, and it pushes that marine air all the way in, comes through the comes through the coastal gaps in the Coast Range and just floods the Wanna Valley. This is the that's the time period to get this really deep marine layer that's maybe 3,000 or 4,000 feet thick. In the summertime, it's great because it's nature's air conditioning. Mm-hmm. We have that that cool marine air in the morning, and it burns off in the afternoon. We have pleasant afternoons, but as we get into fall and winter, those marine pushes just persist here. The other type we can get is in that northwesterly flow. And that's a little bit more tricky to forecast because those are the types where the marine air actually kind of comes up the Columbia River. Mm-hmm. Hits Kelso first about 4 or 5 in the morning, and it kind of comes down into Vancouver, Portland area. You know, sometimes it forms over on the foothills by Troutdale and points eastward and builds back. And then it gets a little bit trickier how extensive that marine stratus can be in those particular situations. So
it's interesting. Yeah. It's pretty specific to this area.
It really is. Yeah.
So I know in California, they have the mist or the fog that comes in or in San Francisco, and they have a name for it. There's actually a Twitter and a name. It's Carl the Fog.
Carl the Fog.
In San Francisco. And I think we should name our stratus marine layer that comes in every fall and winter.
That'd be great. Yeah, it'd be something similar to Carl the Fog, because I understand the photographers really like Carl the Fog, their blog, their website they have, because it can help them go out and take the, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge is so iconic and photogenic.
Right.
With the fog in there. That's a great idea. We should name our fog.
I know, because it is really tough and frustrating to forecast through sometimes when you think the afternoon will get some sunshine and we just don't because the fog just sits in. So,
And as you know, you're an early morning worker, and you know, when I work mid shifts and stuff, you know, sometimes you're going home at 7 o'clock at night and go, wow, I'm forecasting the stratus to kind of come in, and it's just starting to form at that time of day, and then, you know, an hour later it's all in here. So it's very temperamental.
Pretty incredible. So what is some wacky fall weather that we have seen the past few decades? And maybe this is a good time to talk about some tornadoes.
Okay. we'll talk about tornadoes here. We can jump right into there. But let's first of all, before we go there, because we'll get deep into tornadoes probably. You know, the fall season, again, it's kind of when the winter kind of switches on. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, we're into the rainy season. And over the past several years, what I've noticed is we can also get a lot of heavy precipitation events, especially up in the Seattle area.
Okay.
That's when they get some of their biggest floods, is in late October, early November.
Is that from atmospheric rivers specifically?
Rivers. And the jet stream gets really strong that time of year. And it drops down at these latitudes of Oregon and Washington and transports all this moisture from these winter storms into the air. So there's been some big floods in the Seattle area. And we were not immune to that here in Northwest Oregon either.
Yeah.
The one that really kind of stands out in my mind, because I was always the believer that, you know, the first storm of the winter season, you can't get any flooding. But I was proved wrong on that on November 6, 2006.
Okay.
First storm of the year, and we got 14.2 inches of rain at Lee's Camp in 24 hours.
Oh, my God.
And the Tillamook River hit the flood of record.
Yeah.
It was the biggest flood I've seen occurred on the Tillamook River, and that was our first storm of the season. So you can get really, really heavy precipitation during the fall months.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
Is that part of the 10-year flood? Is there a pattern in that sense at all?
There's not so much for those floods.
Okay.
If we want to go back to windstorms, if we go back through and look through history, we do find that there's been a major windstorm about every 10 years on the coast.
Wow, okay.
You know, something that causes really significant damage, you know, 100 mile per hour stuff, 20 mile per hour stuff. But the rainfall frequency and the flooding is, there is frequency of that, but, you know, that we'd have to kind of dig in a little bit more.
Got it. That's interesting. I do love atmospheric rivers and watching them come in and tracking them. I think if I were to go back to school, I'd probably study those across the Pacific Northwest. I just think they're so cool.
They're exciting.
Very powerful systems.
And you being a University of Washington graduate in the Seattle area and growing up in the Seattle area, you've probably seen your fair amount of flooding up in that area.
Oh, yeah.
In the fall months. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Across the peninsula too, and areas around there. So let's jump into tornadoes.
Yeah.
So we did just get one over the weekend. EF0 here. I forget which county. It was in Oregon, though.
It was in Multnomah County.
Multnomah County. Okay.
It was interesting because the farm that the tornado touched down on was pretty close to the the county line of Multnomah County, Washington County.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah.
inside the Multnomah County line.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it was a weak tornado. It did a little bit of minor damage to the farm out there. And sad to say for the farmer out there, that he's got a little bit of damage out there that
yeah.
has to repair. Luckily, his house and stuff was not damaged, but uh-huh. a lot of damage too. We had a big solar array out there. I think that was the most.
Right. And you were out there yourself and
yeah.
you saw
yeah.
the damage.
Yeah, myself and one of our forecasters went out there and did the okay. storm survey. So we could spend the day with the farmer mm-hmm. and several hours and doing the storm survey. But, we can get tornadoes any month of the year here. But if we go back and look through the climatology, we actually see two peaks in the tornado frequency here in Oregon. And there's one in the spring around the May timeframe. And then there's another one in the fall, basically September, October timeframe. Those are like two bimodal peaks. You know, we don't get a lot of tornadoes. I would say on the average, if you go back and look at the 30-year climatology, it's about 4 tornadoes per year okay. in Oregon and about similar in Washington. So they're rare. They're rarer than the Midwest and mm-hmm. they're not nearly as strong as the Midwest.
Yeah, much weaker, like EF2.
Yeah.
At right. max, and yeah. mostly zeros and ones.
Mostly
right?
zeros and ones.
Yeah.
They're very short lived,
uh-huh.
do a little bit of damage. And, you know, whenever they hit your property, if you're the person getting their tornado, it's devastating because it's
right.
they do create damage. But yeah, we do get them,
uh-huh.
But not as frequently as the Midwest. Mm-hmm.
I was reading through, I saw this paper and it just had a whole bunch of stats on tornadoes from 1876 until 2015. And October actually had the most number of recorded tornadoes by month. And yeah, there was a binomial distribution. So springtime and fall time was when we see them the most.
Right.
And then also during daylight hours. We see them the most. So nocturnal yep. tornadoes are pretty rare,
pretty
but then
rare. Right.
You do have to think about people are not really outside watching these. So possibly that is something that could maybe affect how many happen a night. Or?
Yeah, sure. And I think if we look back through history, you know, perhaps we had more than we had
yeah.
because nowadays, everybody has a cell phone.
Yeah,
most people have a cell phone. They're packing a camera,
right.
a video camera, and they have quick access to social media
yeah.
networks to get that information out. So, you know, even just 10, 15 years ago, we didn't have that capability. So
yeah.
I think that's one reason why we're just starting to see and hear about these things more, mm-hmm. even though sometimes.
Yeah, it's a very interesting yeah. idea, just like population growth, right?
right?
In this exactly. decade, in the past few decades, has really yep. pointed out when a tornado occurs
right.
and brought it to people's attention. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So tornadoes, I mean, we saw a couple last year or two in October.
Right.
And I
we
think
did.
There was one in November or there was.
I think early November.
Yeah. yeah. There was a string of days in the fall where we just saw the wackiest
right.
weather.
right. That's right. And, you know, they can't even occur in the wintertime. The one that, I remember is in January of 2009, I guess it was. Yeah, no, I'm sorry, 2008, January 2008, the Vancouver tornado.
Right.
You know, we were actually having cleaning out winter storm warnings in the Cascades
yeah.
that day. And there was a strong cell that came off the West Hills and it formed a brief tornado that did quite a bit of damage to
yeah.
the Vancouver Hazelden area. So,
uh-huh.
yeah, so they can occur.
Yeah, and it seems like the area that gets the most action is portions of like Washington County and Clark County of Washington
right.
and the battleground area along the I-5 corridor, that little
yeah.
pocket right there.
Right.
Gets so many severe storms and seems like a lot of action.
Yeah, and we think, you know, the West Hills has a little bit to do with that because they.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, for tornadoes, you got to have some type of vertical wind shear in the atmosphere.
Right.
And the West Hills kind of help do that a little bit. They kind of help create these, what we call these horizontal vortices that
right.
come off the West Hills. And then all it takes is a little bit of an updraft and tilts
kind of
the
tilts
horizontal
it, yeah.
vortice on its end. And, and you've got a spin up going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Interesting. So West Hills, folks in that area.
Right.
Keep
right.
your eyes peeled in October.
Yeah, and downstream of that, of course, is the
yes,
Vancouver
exactly.
Southwest Washington area.
Everything towards the Northeast.
Right.
So have you noticed any major weather changes in our fall season over the past few decades here?
That's difficult to say, quite
mm-hmm.
honestly. You know, when I first got here, we had really active weather in the fall and
mm-hmm.
into really the early part of the winter. And And I wondered what I got myself into, quite honestly. It's like, oh my goodness, you know, we're having floods, we're having ice storms, we're having blowovers and storms. But it's difficult to say. It does seem in the last few winters that, you know, our first part of our winters hasn't been, you know, maybe as significant or not as frequent as storms, but then, you know, we get them maybe a little bit after the first of the year.
Well, so the it's really hard to
see. Yeah, on the back end, you know, like the last couple of years we've had snowy February.
So yeah, in March last, in March, or earlier this year.
Yeah, so, but I don't know if I could pinpoint that there's been a big change or not. Okay. Yeah, it's just anecdotally,
Well, are there any new exciting developments at the National Weather Service or in the weather world or here that you'd like to talk
about? Yeah, there's some exciting stuff going on, especially with our technology that's occurring. Of course, you know, we've put in two brand new geostationary orbiting Earth satellites in the past couple of years. We call them GOES. There's one on the East Coast now, GOES East. That was the first one that launched. Now we have GOES West, and they're both fully operational now. And this has been fantastic information for us forecasters and meteorologists because, you know, basically we can get, with this new GOES satellite, we get data five times faster, four times the resolution, and basically three times as many channels. So our previous satellites, you know, we could go into a, you know, kind of a what we call a rapid scan mode, you know, configure the satellite for a significant weather event and maybe get data every 5 minutes. Well, now we can get data every minute.
Yeah.
And it's very, very high resolution. So, and I think a lot of people probably saw some of this imagery with the recent hurricane on the East Coast. There's fantastic imagery. So, and so that's great capability. And also on this satellite platform is we have a geostationary lightning mapper on it. So
I've been using that a lot. Yeah. It's so cool to see.
It is.
Yeah. Especially with that. Cool. Yeah. The lightning outbreak that we've had the past couple of weeks, the one in Seattle a couple days ago was great.
Yeah. So getting lightning detection from space now is is fantastic because historically it's been a ground-based sensor.
Yeah. Okay. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
Very cool.
This is great technology that we've invested in. Our country's invested in for our citizens. It's really a boon to weather forecast.
This may be a more deeper question, but how do you feel about the future of forecasting and how it may advance or the opposite?
Yeah, it's exciting, quite honestly, because I've seen a lot of rapid developments or lots of enhancements in my career. And quite honestly, it's been attributable to numerical weather prediction. Our numerical weather models has gotten so good over the years. And it's all about because the computing capacity has increased so much, but our modelers has been able to put many more atmospheric physics into the models. And they're just fantastic right now. In fact, they're quite uncanny as, you know, you can look at go, oh, there's a storm that's going to develop out here in the Pacific Ocean 6 days from now. And it does, you know, uncanny scale. And then also just the resolution. So it's really got down to the resolution of just a few kilometers. So you can really resolve stuff like the Columbia River Gorge and these really micro scale processes. Precipitation physics and snow and ice. It's great.
Noticing on the global model, the GFS, that you can get it really down to just our region. And I wasn't sure if it was actually that high res or if it was just kind of extrapolating to this area.
Right. And then, you know, and some of these models, like you talked about the GFS, the Global Forecast System, is our global model, which is pretty high resolution. But then you can step down to these, like the high resolution rapid refresh model.
Right.
It's really high resolution, just a few kilometers.
The HERR.
Exactly. And it runs every hour. You know, and you can get yourself a 15, 18 hour forecast every hour, which is fantastic. And then a lot of the big developments right now is the United States has put a lot of effort into what we call convective allowing models. So basically that allows this to kind of replicate the physics of convection. And this is kind of how they forecast thunderstorm development, tornadic development. And our folks at the Storm Prediction Center in Norman, Oklahoma, are probably some of the best tornado forecasters in the world. They're pinpointing out a day or two in advance that, hey, we're going to have a significant tornadic outbreak in this part of the country. And these could be long track tornadoes. Mm-hmm. And they're having skill at doing that, which That's is fantastic.
Great. Are there any other agencies around the world that use our data and our models?
Yeah, I believe there are because, you know, we make all of this information free to everyone. So certainly lots of agencies around the United States, whether it be government agencies or private industry, kind of uses the models. Certainly, just like we use other nations' models, like we use the Canadian model, we use the European model. Right. Folks out in the Pacific Ocean use the Japanese model. So folks are using our models. Mm-hmm. You know, I would dare venture guess that the Europeans and maybe folks in Iceland and stuff like that are using our GFS model to kind of see what's coming.
Yeah.
And even comparing the global models to global models, just like the GFS that gets compared with the European model right. and stuff. So, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. And this is the great part about our profession is we have this thing called the World Meteorological Organization, or WMO, and there's agreements we share data freely. Mm-hmm. We can share observations, we can share the upper air data that there's no weather balloons, and we share the model data. Mm-hmm. So we all benefit from that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. All right. Well, we've got fall on the way here. Yeah. So we've got some different weather to look forward to, probably right. more rain. Yeah. And do you have any idea when the first snowfall typically is in the mountains?
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
Well, certainly in the mountains is easier because I think as soon as we get into, certainly into October, if you get in the right weather pattern, you can see it then.
Okay.
You can get the dusting up on Mount uh-huh. Hood, you know, and certainly above pass level, the timberline or Mount Hood Meadows yeah. is going to get a dust.
That's exciting.
It is exciting. and then, you know, as soon as the cold air gets in here, we can start getting snowfall in the mountains. You know, over the years that I've been here, many years we've had the snowpack start accumulating in November. Mm-hmm. And if we can do that, it's really great because you can get a good accumulation of snow in November, December, and it stays all year because it remains cold. But it's a million-dollar question of when the snow is going to occur, especially in the low elevations where it really has high impact. And that's a very challenging.
Point. Well,
and everybody's interested.
Exactly. Let's get through fall first and enjoy the sweater and boot weather.
Right.
And that'll be great. Awesome.
Okay.
Well, thanks for chatting, Tyree. It was great to learn more about our weather here and kind of more about models and kind of behind-the-scenes stuff, too.
Yeah, it's been great chatting here this afternoon.
Awesome. We'll tune into another podcast. We launch them every Wednesday here on the Coin6 Weather Podcast Network. It's been fun. Have a good one.
The Coin6 Podcast Network is your home for all sorts of content you can't find anywhere else. Visit coin.com/coinpodcast to see our entire library. And you can always subscribe to all of the Coin6 podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Coming soon on the Coin Podcast Network.
We're here because Frank Gable murdered Michael Frank.
He collapsed and died before getting anyone's attention.
It's a travesty of justice, and the state of Oregon has fought to keep him in jail.
Did you see Frank Gable stab Michael Frankie?
No.
Relatively few carjackings turn into murders.
There's a killer out there somewhere. Don't let me get railroaded for this. That's all I want.
Keep an ear out for that story coming soon and check out more great Coin Podcast Network presentations on coin.com, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.